This is Issues and Ideas here on KCBX Central Coast Public Radio. I'm Randall White. From the moment Central Coast Congresswoman Lois Capps announced her plans to retire at the end of this term, candidates looking to fill her spot began to announce their intentions to run. KCBX is inviting each registered candidate onto this show, Issues and Ideas, in order to share their visions for the 24th Congressional District, which includes all of San Luis Obispo and Santa Barbara counties, as well as a portion of Ventura County in the Los Padres National Forest. Montecito resident Democrat Benjamin Lucas is among the most recent entries into the race, but I have to be honest, that's about all I know at this point, and that's why I'm glad we have this sit-down interview right now. Benjamin Lucas joins us in studio to discuss his vision for serving the 24th District should he be elected to the seat in November 2016. Welcome to Issues and Ideas, Benjamin.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, Randall.
So you are a bit of an enigma to the media and also your fellow candidates. Why hold back on everything until right now?
I feel it's a little early in the campaign to disclose everything. It's a long haul, and the momentum picks up in an election like this, I feel, maybe a month prior to voting and maybe March when it really gets serious. So I wanted to see the debate. I wanted to see the other candidates, see what they had to say, and who I felt was my legitimate competitors.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned the debate because that's where we will start. You were not at the Cal Poly debate held back on February 4th. So I'm going to ask you the questions that the political science department formulated for the nine candidates who were on stage, starting with what are the greatest challenges facing institutions of higher education and what is the appropriate role of the federal government in meeting those challenges?
Well, if you watched the Democratic debates with Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton, you noticed this was a broad topic for them also. I wouldn't lean as far left as Bernie by saying that it should be free for everyone to go to college. I do understand that, but there has to be some sort of moderate exchange there. I think students would actually appreciate their education just a little more. And if you've been attending any Southern California schools lately, you notice the attendance is in abundance. So to allow
free, you mean packed classrooms,
packed classrooms, hard to get your classes, scheduling. I don't know by making it free how that would ever make that accessibility any more accessible. You can only handle so many students in the system. So my idea for education, and it fits into healthcare program, is I think that any student that goes through undergrad and gets into a medical school on their own volition, the government would step in at that point, no matter what school they get accepted at, and pay their medical tuition. And by doing this, what they do in return after they graduate with their doctors is they give service to the country for 5 years. They go into area hospitals that are set up and established in rural communities in Compton, in areas where doctors don't want to matriculate towards. This way, you sit them at a base salary of a living standard, $150,000 a year, whatever that salary may be. They serve 5 years, 1 year in different cities. They learn service back to the community. They repay their debt to the government. And they also learn the interaction in a community where Obamacare may not be accepted. There's a lot of areas where you might have insurance, but it doesn't mean you're going to get insurance coverage. So this would allow these communities in Texas and all over the country to have a hospital in their community without the financial burden of trying to support that privately.
How did you come up with that?
For the last 10 years, some people might have been having jobs. I've been thinking about running for this seat pretty much my whole life. And opportunity and preparation, I think, have made a perfect storm for me to come right in between Salud and Ms. Snyder and come right up that center, the Democratic path. And I think all roads lead to the end result, and it's job creation.
And you said that your whole life has led up to this point, and you have run for office twice before. Can you explain those?
I was a resident of Los Angeles in Laurel Canyon for 25 years. Actually, I lived in Jim Morrison's house from the Doors. I raised my children in that house. I had home births there. I was a rooted citizen of that community until I felt a little old anymore. And it got a little crowded in the Hollywood Hills. Made a nice life down there. And I ran for District 4 City Council against John Ferraro, a 30-year city president, nine-term veteran.
What year was that?
I think it was 99 I first ran.
Mm-hmm. and then you ran one more time in a special
Mr.
election.
Mr. Ferraro died, and I ran again in a special election against Tom Labonge, Beth Garfield, Dick Roberti, a lot of challenging people.
And so now this time it is Congress, and that will move us on to the next question that was posed to the candidates that were on stage back on the 4th of February. What national strategies should we be pursuing to ensure economic growth and prosperity for residents of the 24th District?
You know, job creations for our area are difficult. It has a heavy Central Valley, which has a lot of agriculture. To increase agricultural jobs in a drought is an oxymoron at best. You know, it's you can't increase production if you can't supply the water, and 80% of our water comes from agriculture. So I don't think that's going to increase our job function here. And Goleta, one of the number one growing cities in our state, really, in our district, Solvang, all these areas, it is development along the Central Coast and tourism. But, you know, the housing, you can't supply any more housing. So for job creation, I think you have to look at the educational system we have here, supply the jobs, like I said, through finding students a way to intermingle into national positions. Try to, you know, it's not all about job creation here. It's about job creation in the whole country.
And in terms of jobs, your specific job, you're in architectural design?
Correct. I do project consulting now. Right now, I'm currently moving two historical homes from the Cancer Center project, the $60 million project there for Samsung in Santa Barbara. They had to gift two of the houses were historical 1905, 1924 craftsmen. So I found a new location for them, and we're relocating them next week, actually.
All right. On to the next question here. What federal policies will best secure sustainable water supplies? You mentioned water just a moment ago, and prevent environmental degradation of the Central Coast.
I think there has to be some sort of marriage between government and agriculture here, where we have subsidies that marry, they're not planting for now. They can't drill any more wells. This just isn't going to sustain itself. NASA showed pictures. If you look at the NASA data on the underground, it's just emptying down there. We're down thousands of feet. It takes a drop of water 1,000 years to get back to that source. So I know that the farmers need it, but every part of the country has gone through some sort of system of subsidies during drought, famine, over rain. They just have to accept the fact that they might not be the biggest grower right now. And they're selling their water, you know. Part of the problem is they have water rights and they're allowed to sell those. So they make more money now possibly, you know, selling their water than they are growing.
So would you work to halt that process of being able to sell water rights?
It's just going downstream. It's all getting used. It's not getting saved. It's just going to somewhere else and getting used, and then they're drilling wells. What I think we should do is there's a pipeline now coming from Lake Superior. I don't know if you've read about that, being fed into the Green River in Arizona. I think a more functional way to get our water supply here would be to come across the Transcontinental Highway from Lake Superior, drop in across Idaho into the top of Nevada, and feed Lake Mead from right into the source up there with a 4-foot in diameter pipe, and keep that as a head tank, a reservoir, until we fill Lake Mead back up, and we give a stipend to those lake communities that are in desperate need of money, Flint, and all the other water resources. So all those lakes, the lakes are the last place that this earth is going to go dry. That's why they're called the Great Lakes. When the glaciers melt and all the runoff comes and all the things come down from the north, it's going to go to the Great Lakes. So we have to start looking at North America as one unit instead of individual states, individual continents. We only have so much resource in North America, and we have to start sharing it. So if Canada wants to bring their pipeline down across our aquifer with oil, we'll let them build us one across the Transcontinental Highway at their cost in case they taint our water. We have an extra water supply. That also allows water in areas of Northern America where they have none, where the fracking's occurring, and there's massive growth of development in North Dakota, South Dakota. That gives a nice source of water across the Transcontinental Highway for the Canadian people to develop their lower lands, and maybe we can move some population up there instead of growing our cities bigger and bigger.
This next question got the candidates fired up on stage. What will you do in Congress to address the social divisions and political polarization that characterizes politics in the U.S. today as a member of Congress?
One of the major factors I think we're missing in the whole educational process is social assimilation. There's so many cultures, so many people, so many diverse communities in our country anymore. We're no longer the melting pot. We've become more segregated, regimented against developments, closed communities. So I feel that through education, I have a program I call International High School. I want to take closed military bases, lease them from the United States government, privately finance them with civil service positions that we pay for by any country we earmark money to. We send it to Iraq for schooling and educating their children. We take that, we calculate the cost of education per student. We offer those countries we send money the ability to send anybody in their country between 12 and 14 to the international high school. They come to America, they attend an international high school, 1 year English immersion, 3 years international high school curriculum. We take them, they speak English, they are educated with a high school degree, they go home with a stipend after a four-year education, they have everybody's address from around the world, they all know what each other looks like, and they've actually felt democracy. It's not a word anymore. After five generations of this, only five high school graduating classes, you would have four or five generations of families that have been educated through the democracy process and through an international philosophy. And you can take this philosophy and take it to other countries for the immigration problem with Syria and other things that are happening. We can help everybody, but we can save culture. We can save humanity. We can save the children that are at that point of transition in their life when you can take them and actually teach them. By doing this, we can take health care off the national. We can teach them education, health care, nutrition, diet, dentistry. They go home a new kid. That's my idea about. And also it adds money and jobs to rural communities in this country where we really need the stimulus. It keeps those bases warm and functional. Those job bases are really important to those communities. Florida, Texas, Arkansas, California. We fought the government to keep those bases open. Why? Because we wanted to know them? No, because it supplies a lot of income to our rural stimulus.
And so that's your plan for social divisions. How about the political polarization there in Congress? How would you work to make sure that both sides of the aisle got along?
I think my first day in Congress, my first words would be, "Good morning, Speaker Ryan. May I spot those weights for you?"
Okay,
I would start working across the border, and I would stick to his side like a shadow. And I would say, I'll do that. I want to go there and work. I'm not going there to have a job. I want to go there. I'm going to sleep on my cot just like him. I'm going to work 18 hours a day for you. That's what I want to do with my life.
All right. Now, let's move out of the questions that were posed at the debate and into some questions that I've asked your fellow candidates that were sitting at this exact same table. What are your views on oil exploration along the Central Coast and then delivery of that oil, which has become contentious?
Oil is never going to leave the California coast. And if we don't pump it, I feel it's going to seep out at a faster rate than we could probably pump it out. We just seem to be sitting on mass quantities here, and it seeps out in Toro Canyon and Santa Barbara sometimes so bad it just runs down the hill. So obviously we have oil, we need to explore it, and I think we're doing a fine job. I don't think since the big spill in Santa Barbara, there's really been a major spill. And transporting it by rail, I'd have to be most likely for the rail transport.
PG&E is currently, on the same topic of energy production, PG&E is currently asking the Nuclear Regulatory Commission to renew its operating permits for the two reactors at Diablo Canyon Nuclear Power Plant. Do you support studies that assert that the plant is seismically safe or those who express concerns over those studies?
I know you don't know much about me, but I actually was a control room operator at Three Mile Island. And I started my life as nuclear engineering field, and I came up through the energy field. So energy is one of my favorite topics. And in the first page of my solution, I start with energy. We'd all be naive to think nuclear power isn't going to be a formidable transfer point to alternative power. Right now, San Luis Obispo gets 1,700,000 homes lit up from Diablo Canyon. at best, the solar field can supply 11% of power to the grid during optimum sun hours, and that's it. Right now, we're using Utah, Nevada, Arizona, and New Mexico as exhaust stacks for California. Picture an automobile, and you're running diesel stacks right out the back end of our state, and we're running them out through areas that aren't being observed. The coal-fired plants we're using to supply Southern California with electric are some of the worst polluters in the country. So to think we're going to transfer to alternative power by 2030, like Governor Brown wants us to do, we just keep farming it out to our suburbs and bringing it back in. We can get off this power dependency from the grid. And what I'm going to say about nuclear power is if we take 10 of our plants around the country and pick them that are in valuable positions for the grid, and we put state-of-the-art new AP1000 Westinghouse reactors in that we know most likely are not going to have an accident in the next 50 years. If we keep pushing our plants, 50-year-old plants, at the rate we're pushing them to demand the power we need in this country, we will have accidents. No doubt.
Benjamin Lucas, Montecito resident, Democrat, running for the 24th Congressional District. Thank you for joining us here on Issues and Ideas.
Thank you for having me, and thank you for so much time.
And this is Issues and Ideas here on KCBX Central Coast Public Radio. I'm Randall White.